So yesterday we discussed unperturbed energy levels for free electrons in a crystal. This is plotted in the first Bilwin zone. And if you have free electrons, it's a translationally invariant system. Momentum is a good quantum number. We can label them with K. But if there is no other intrinsic quantum number, we should not need any other quantum number, but we insisted on keeping another quantum number P. And now we will see that this P will emerge into what we will call as band index, which will be a new quantum number. So this is P equal to 0, this branch was P equal to minus 2 pi by A, this was P equal to 0, this branch was P equal to 2 pi by A, and so on. So what we are going to do now is, these are the unperturbed energy levels. We are going to include the effect of the perturbation. So, and we will keep it to lowest order. So we'll remove all terms, or we'll ignore all terms that have multiplication of two small quantities. So what we mean by that, we are interested in calculating the energy levels, how these energy levels will shift with by including the effect of interactions. So these energy levels, we'll write them as EP, the unperturbed ones, plus the first order correction. And then same for the wave functions. So I'm ignoring here the plane wave part, which only depends on K. Now, we would do this in Fourier space, so you can also write down, instead of x, we can also use q. And what are the unperturbed energy levels that we have plotted here? Ep naught k. These are h bar square over 2m k plus p whole square. Right? So now let me write down the equation that we were interested in solving for all q. So the equation we are interested in solving is h bar square k plus q square 2m u tilde p k q plus 1 over l sum over q prime u tilde q prime. There might be like, I think last time when we defined, we called it q subscript q, but now I'm just using it in the argument. U p k Now, here you can replace EP naught, this term. So we can just replace this EP naught k plus the first order term. Same thing you can do for u. You will see there will be a term that will involve the first order term here times this. This we will ignore. We only want to keep things to the lowest order. Also, this quantity here, is nothing but it can be written as EQ. This is the formula for EP naught. So now we make all these substitutions and make some simplification. And also you can see that here you will substitute this. Keep in mind that the argument here is Q minus Q prime. So when you make substitution, you will have Q minus Q prime 0, Q minus Q prime 1. This potential itself is weak because we're doing perturbation. This is the perturbation term. So this is already small. So we'll also ignore this times U1. So the terms we keep. They can be written in the following way. And then we have this contribution from the from the periodic potential. There will be a U1 term that we have neglected. So let's try to solve this equation and see what is the outcome for the energy shifts. Now also, we deduced yesterday that U tilde naught, the unperturbed wave functions, these should be chosen as delta PQ. Right? So now look at this term multiplied by these two. If you put for this term delta PQ, these two are exactly the same, so it cancels out. So this term multiplied by this goes away. You only have this term multiplied by this. So now we put this back in. You can also see if you put delta function here, you'll get delta function of P and Q minus Q prime. So this sum over, this should be Q prime. So you can see that that sum over Q prime will go away and you would just get U tilde Q minus P. Now this equation is rather strange itself. Why? Because again we have this delta function. So what I mean by that is let's analyze this equation. Now, we want to solve this equation for all Q. Right? So let's consider two special cases when Q is equal to P. When Q is equal to P, this delta function contributes. This term becomes 0. When Q is equal to P, this term okay, so what that really tells us is this term drops out. So we can calculate that this term will tell us that the shifts as a function of k are simply u tilde 0 by L. Right? Now, this u tilde 0, it does not depend on k at all. So this case, q equal to p, is just giving you some constant shift that is independent of k. So the effect of this term is simply to move this up or down. So this is not relevant at all. And from now on, we will set u tilde 0 to be 0. So we're just redefining the shifts, redefining the energy axis. However, when q is not equal to p, in that case, also another important thing from just q equal to p is this term goes away. What can we say about the corrections to the wave function? So if this term goes away, this is arbitrary, right? This term here. So an interesting property in this case, of this case, is that u tilde, the first order correction, is arbitrary. So this can actually be arbitrarily large also. If it is very large, then we cannot ignore it in this product. So we had u times u0 and u1, which we ignored. If this is arbitrarily large, we should not have ignored that term, right? So there is, we already see one problem with this. Let's look at the other case when q is not equal to p. If q is not equal to p, this term goes away. So you can calculate the corrections and you would see that u tilde, the first order correction, pkq, is minus capital U tilde q minus p divided by L. And then you have an energy denominator eq naught k minus ep naught k. Right? So this term goes away if q is not equal to p, and I can solve this equation. Now, this has a problem also if eq naught k is equal to ep naught k. Now, we are solving this equation for all q and arbitrary values of k and p. Now, when for this condition to be true, we can see from the unperturbed energy levels that the only place you have degeneracies are at the zone boundaries and at the zone center of the first Brillouin zone and at the boundaries. In fact, this is a very general concept. Typically in condensed matter systems and crystals, you would find that these zone corners and center of the Brillouin zone, these are high symmetry points, and typically you will get degeneracies at these points. So for the moment, you can convince yourself by looking at that band diagram that we want to solve it for arbitrary k and q. So only the k values at the zone corner and zone center are relevant. So this happens. At k equal to 0 or plus minus pi by a. Now, if k is equal to 0, So if K is equal, so this equation, let me write it down. What this really means is K plus Q square H bar square over 2M is equal to K plus P square. So if K is equal to zero, that is we are at the zone center and we have already demanding that Q is not equal to P, the only possibility is Q should be minus P. If K is equal to plus minus pi over A, then we'll find out that Q should be minus P minus or plus 2 pi over A. So we can see it from this constraint. Now, what have we done so far? We have figured out cases where U1 blows up, U1 tilde, the correction blows up. For these cases, for this value of K and this, and for this value of K and this value of Q, this U1 tilde blows up, this denominator vanishes. Also, when Q is equal to P, then U1 tilde is arbitrary. It can be arbitrarily large. So what we have really done is we have shown that at these special, at A, at degeneracies, whenever you have degeneracy, then you should not use this perturbation theory. But also there is a special point when Q is equal to P, you should not trust the result of the perturbation theory. So what should we do? We will next do degenerate perturbation theory because we should really be dealing with these degeneracies. So now we are going to focus on only one point, that is pi over A. We know there are degeneracies here and here, but let's ignore them. Let's take the special case and let's look at what happens in the vicinity of pi over A. So we are really looking at K naught equal to pi over A minus delta, where delta is much smaller than pi over A. Now, in this case, we've just deduced that the terms we have ignored here, we should keep the U1 terms, U1 times capital U tilde terms in these around this point. So what that means is this 1 over L sum over Q prime, U tilde Q prime, U tilde first P K naught Q minus Q prime. This is what we ignored when we wrote down this equation. But now we know we should not ignore it. But we are not going to keep all of the terms. We are only going to keep terms that agree with either this or this. So we know that when this argument, Q minus Q prime, belongs to these cases, U1 of U1 can be very large. So let's keep, what does this tell us? Q equal to P, but now the argument is Q minus Q prime. So we'll set Q minus Q prime equal to P. So from here, we'll get U tilde Q minus P U tilde 1. I'm just writing K naught here, P. So I'm taking a special value for this argument. So Q minus Q prime must be P. And I'm keeping, so this has many, this sum is over all values of Q prime, but I'm not keeping all of those terms. I'm only keeping, this is coming from Q equal to P. But there will be more terms. There'll be terms corresponding to this case, and I can write them down. So I'm interested, because I'm only interested in this case, which is close to this pi over a, so I should really consider q equal to minus p minus 2 pi by a. And this will give me u tilde q plus p plus 2 pi by a u tilde 1 p k naught minus p minus 2 pi by a. So now what we are going to do is we are going to add these two terms to this equation, the terms that we should not have ignored in the first place. This would actually simplify the calculation a bit. So let's go ahead and write down the equation. And let's add these terms. So we'll only keep these terms. So we have u tilde q minus p over l, u tilde 1 Yes.
Why are you not adding the term where q is equal to minus p plus 2 pi over a?
This is that term. Right?
Looking at one corner, not the other.
But why don't both corners contribute?
So because I'm only restricted to this. If you want to do that analysis, you will do it as minus pi by a plus delta. But we're just focusing on that end, yeah. So now we can look at, if we look at this term, this is u naught. So this really, we know, is delta p q minus q prime, right? So what it really means is p must be equal to q minus q prime. So this sum will only contribute when q prime is equal to q minus p. So the contribution of this term is actually 1 over l. Basically, it's u tilde q minus p over l times u tilde naught pk p, right? This you can see can be combined with this one. You can just add u tilde naught and u tilde 1 to get u again. But remember, the argument will be p here. So I will just write down the equation here. So this term can be combined. Let me write down the result, and then we'll analyze it. So what we will get is this term. So this is really the equation that we should be dealing with. The reason we are doing all this is if you just do degenerate perturbation theory, you'll miss this term. So this term is also important for our case. So now let's just define some new symbols and analyze this. So we have U1 tilde, which is U tilde P K naught P. And we define U2 tilde as U tilde P K naught minus P minus 2 pi by A. So there are a lot of variables here. So to keep track of them, the reason we have what those U tildes really mean. So if you think about about this point and focus on these two branches, one is P equal to 0. So if you put P equal to 0 there, you will have one will have argument 0, and the other one is minus 2 pi by A. So in general, if you think what those are really the pth branch, and then minus P minus 2 pi by A, that gives you this branch. So those two are really from this or this and so on. So now again, let's take two cases. When Q is equal to P, in that case, you know U tilde naught must be 0. And what you get is EP naught K, K naught U1 tilde plus U tilde 2P plus 2 pi by A, U2 tilde EP K naught U1 tilde. And when Q is equal to minus P minus 2 pi by A, then you get E minus P minus 2 pi by A naught K naught U2 tilde plus U tilde minus 2P minus 2 pi by A. I think we have L here. U1 tilde right. So what we have done here is just written down this equation for cases where we are looking at those degeneracies. So this equation for values Q equal to P and Q equal to this, these values come from Q equal to P is that case, and Q equal to minus P minus 2 pi by A is this case, right? Any questions? So this is the general equation we want to solve. And we want to look at the places Q equal to P where U1 is arbitrary. So we want to calculate what U1 is at K0 equal to pi by A, or around K0 equal to pi by A, for values of Q where U1 tilde diverges. Right? So that gives us Q minus P minus 2 pi by A, which gives us this equation, and Q equal to P, which gives us this equation. So far our analysis tells us that at these points, U's are arbitrary, cannot be calculated. So let's try, we can now see that we can find out. So either this equation will have a trivial solution, U1, U2, 0, we are not interested in that. But this will have a non-trivial solution if So let's write it down like this. Ep naught k naught minus Ep k naught. You can write this as u tilde 2p plus 2k naught. Now I've used another trick. Because the potential, the periodic potential is real, the Fourier coefficients, so this is Fourier coefficient with the minus of the argument, the complex conjugate is same as the negative. And I've just replaced k naught equal to pi by a. Any questions so far? Okay. So this equation, yes.
Why do we say that u tilde is 0, 0? Why do we say set this to 0? Why do we have this?
Just for convenience. If you want, we can keep it. What this will do is it will just shift.
Shift the energies.
Shift the energies. So it's just a matter of convention. Okay. It will basically, it's independent of k. It will, the shift will not depend on k. Whether, so here we had, we are only focusing on k naught equal to pi by a. We set it to 0 because we already figured out that this is not going to play a role. So now this has non-trivial solutions. If the determinant of this is 0, so now we are almost there. And we get this equation like this. Any questions? So now we are going to analyze this equation. And again, for the moment, let's look at k equal to pi by a over there. Let me try to zoom in on, so I'm just drawing. You have this, and then you have this. So, this is just a zoom in for that corner over there. And we, so we are looking at k naught equal to pi over a, this zone corner. Now, what is this term? This term is the unperturbed energy for minus p minus 2 pi by a. So this is the unperturbed energy level of the upper branch, right? This branch. So in, if you consider this degeneracy, it's the unperturbed energy of this band. If you consider a higher one, it's always the top band. What is this? This is the unperturbed energy of the lower band. right? What are these guys? These guys are saying this quantity is the energy of the pth band with correction, with the first order correction. So we are assuming that the periodic potential is small. So if we are looking at unperturbed energy level, energy of this branch, we are going to assume that close to k0 equal to pi by a, if we are on this branch, if you add correction, so imagine that you are close to pi by a, so this is the value here. This is the value with correction of the lower branch. So because the potential is small, we're going to assume that the correction, even with the correction, the energy value does not move above the upper branch. So this is an approximation which we can make because we're already assuming that the periodic potential is weak. What that means is that this term is greater than zero. Now, this is always greater than zero. That means this term must be greater than zero, right? Now, you can write down, if you write down this equation here, the unperturbed energy levels, this we know, this is just h bar square over 2m, pi by a plus p square. The unperturbed energy level here, this is minus, this h bar square over 2m, pi by a minus p minus 2 pi by a square. This can also be written as ep naught k naught. Right? So in the end, we get this square is equal to this. So we can write down that EP naught at pi over a minus EP pi over a whole square is u tilde 2p plus 2 pi by a over L square. And now from our analysis, we said that this, the sign of this quantity should be positive. So when we take the square root, we should take the positive sign. We know that the sign should be positive. That means that the correction for the pth branch at pi by a is going to be the unperturbed level minus square root of this, so this quantity square root should be positive. Take this here, bring this here, get this. So what we have really shown here is that the with perturbation, the this lower branch P, the energy level should, with perturbation, it should go down. The lower branch, its energy should go down by this much amount. You can do the same analysis just by looking at this equation. Any questions about our conclusion? Yes?
So you're saying it should go down. Are you saying it's on a lower line underneath from the one?
So this level, it should become like at k naught, it should be like this. It should be lower by a certain amount. Now we can do the same analysis for the upper branch, which was minus p minus 2 pi by a. Now here, the same analysis will tell us that when we take square root, we should take the negative sign. How? So here we are interested in this term. Look at this term. This term is unperturbed energy level of the lower branch. So we are going to assume, and this now, this P we are choosing to be the upper branch, right? So this is corrected energy of the upper branch. So we are going to assume that the corrected energy of the upper branch is still higher than the unperturbed energy of the lower branch. So this should be negative. This is always positive, so this must be negative. So when we take square root with p equal to minus p minus 2 pi by a, then we should take the negative sign. So you will find that the corrected energy for minus p minus 2 pi by a, this should be the minus p minus 2 pi by a plus so this upper branch, it should really go like this. Yes.
So we just assume that the perturbed level, energy level, will be lower.
For the lower branch. Yeah. Yep.
And then we concluded that it's lower.
So this is perturbed and. So this is unperturbed level of upper branch. And this is the energy with correction of the lower branch. So if you are away from pi over a, so at this point they are degenerate. But if you look just to the left of it, the energy of this is always higher than this one. So with correction, the energy here should be lower than the energy. This is really the upper branch. So the argument is slightly more subtle than, it's not an assumption. It really must be. Well, it does assume that the potential is weak enough that they don't cross. So that's really the argument, that the potential is not strong enough to readjust the order of the bands. Any questions? Any other questions? So what we have really shown with this analysis is that a gap opens up. At the zone boundary k equal to pi over a. We can do exactly the same analysis with some differences at all other values of k naught, and we will find that a gap will open up due to this periodic potential at all of the degeneracies. So that band diagram that we drew, now it would look more like, let's draw minus pi over a. Pi over a. So it will more look like this. And then you will have a gap. And then you will have and so on. So what this tells us is that combination of p's that we kept different branches now emerges as a new quantum index. This we'll call, let's use some index n. This let's call it n equal to 1, n equal to 2, n equal to 3. Now these are band indices. This is the lowest block band. And why these are, so you can think of these as different quantum numbers. So you have, this is k, the quasi-momentum. This is already a quantum number. So for each band, you have energy levels that are labeled by k. So this n equal to 2 band, it's a combination of two values of p. Any questions so far? Yes.
Can you continue this plot to the right, please? What if you increase p beyond the first dimension?
Yeah, so if you want to do the unfolded version, you can just put this, you can just flip this over here. So you will get like, so what you're saying, you will get something like this, and then you'll get like this, and then you'll get like this, and so on.
And why do you have discontinuities by changing the momentum?
No, this is because we have potential, periodic potential, and this potential has same periodicity as that of lattice. So the Fourier coefficient, the interaction with this potential opens up gaps at the values of pi over a and so on. So if, yeah, so it's really an effect of the periodic potential. So here, so we only did analysis for exactly k not equal to pi by a. If you really do for k not equal to minus pi, you would see that this is like vanishing curvature. So this is, yeah, you will see the curvature there. So yeah, I think you can see it by just doing the same analysis, including k. Now, this result that a gap opens up is useful to prove an important theorem, which is called Hill's. So what this theorem states is that one-dimensional, equally spaced chain is unstable at half filling of the lowest block band. So now we are only going to talk about this band. So let me repeat what this theorem says. It says that if you have a one-dimensional, equally spaced lattice, equally spaced chain, and you are at half filling of the lowest block band, that means that the total energy that is occupied is half of this band, this system is unstable. So this we can prove now. So let's try to prove this. So we are, so now we are only going to look at this band. So let's zoom it. Let's draw it like this. So this is minus pi over a, pi over a. Now, we know that the k values, they are quantized because of periodic boundary conditions. The first Brillouin zone, k belongs to minus pi over a to pi over a. This implies that the small integer n should be chosen from minus n by 2 to n by 2. So you can count the total number of k values that are allowed. So the total number of values are n. So the total number of states in the lowest block band is n. We have ignored spin in this. You can do the entire analysis with spin, then you will get total states to be 2n. But the theorem states that it should be unstable at half filling. So everything gets doubled, but at half filling, it will still be unstable. So let's ignore spin for the moment. That means at half filling, you have total number of electrons, you have n by 2 electrons. So now n by 2 electrons how would we imagine filling the band? So let's imagine T equal to zero. So we are at zero temperature, and let's imagine creating this system from vacuum. So we start with vacuum, no electrons at all, and we are going to create n by 2 electrons. We are at T equal to zero, so we are going to minimize system's energy. You take the first electron, you put it at k equal to zero, the zeroth value of n, that is the lowest energy. Then the next electron, you put, take n equal to one value, then minus one, then two, minus two, and you put all the electrons till you can, the lowest energy that is available to you. And you stop when you run out of electrons. So you would conclude from this exercise that the band that you have for with n by 2 electrons, it would be filled till, so all these states will be filled. Now, typically, the at zero temperature, the highest occupied energy level, that would be called as Fermi energy. Now, in three dimensions, energy is a function of k. So there can be many values of k that can have same energy. So if you restrict this energy, call it Fermi energy, you will have a space, a surface in k space that will have same energy. In one dimension, this surface is simply two points, that is this point here and this point here. So the Fermi surface for this point is k equal to 2π/a, and sorry, π/2a, and minus π/2a. Any questions so far? Now let's imagine that we have this 1D chain, equally spaced chain. Let's draw it. And now we are going to imagine, let's do a thought experiment, and let's imagine that every other ion in this equally spaced chain spontaneously moves either to the left or to the right. So it will spontaneously choose whether it wants to move left or right. That will mean that there are two possibilities for doing this. That is, let's say every other ion, that is this one, this one, this one, this one, it moves to the left. That will give us, you will have this space, and then you would have this, then you would have this. This. And we'll keep going on. Another possible choice is to the right. So let's draw that also. You will have this. And so on. Right? Now, if this lattice constant was A, now the lattice constant in this case is 2A. Same here. By slightly moving, well, I've drawn it to exaggerate, but even if it moves slightly, the periodicity has doubled. Right? If we have doubled the periodicity, that implies that the first Willwin zone now for these doubled cases, the first Willwin zone, this should be from minus π/2a to π/2a. The lattice constant has simply doubled, right? Now, this means if I draw the band diagram, now I should really do, so this is what I started with. This is minus pi over a. This is pi over a. So I should really look at now. The first Brillouin zone is reduced. So the band structure should really be this. From our conclusion of perturbation theory, we know that a gap will open up due to periodic potential at the zone boundaries. So really, this band diagram is more like this. Now compare this band diagram versus the one you had over there. Now half filling here corresponds to fully filled block band for a doubled system. So what you have done by opening up a gap or by doubling the lattice periodicity is that you have decreased the total energy of the electrons. So by moving the ions slightly to the left or to the right, you have decreased the total energy of the electrons. Total energy of the system is not just energy of the electrons, but it also includes energy of the ions. So to move the ions, you need to pay an additional energy to move them. But if the potential is strong enough, the cost that you have to pay will be more than compensated in the energy gain by doubling from this gap. So this is basically the statement. If you have a 1D equally spaced chain, then depending on the strength of the potential, you can always find a small displacement of the ions that will result in what is called dimerization, which will be one of these two choices. So this is where the spontaneous part kicks in. The system can spontaneously choose whether to move left or right, which one is moving. And then the new ground state would be a dimerized version of the equally spaced chain. You will have a homework problem on this. This is an important concept. And we know a chain polyacetylene that can be modeled like this. And we see some interesting properties for this material. And this will be one of the problems on the homework. Another problem on the homework is on phonons that we'll start on Monday. So you will have more than enough time for that problem also. So any questions about the theorem? So what we have proved this theorem. So a one-dimensional equally spaced chain is unstable due to the effect of gaps opening up at the zone boundary. Any questions so far? So far we have ignored the effect. So we only included single particle terms so far. We have not included the effect of electron-electron interactions. So we have ignored Coulomb interactions so far. Next, what we would like to do is we would like to include electron-electron interactions. And to do that, let's try to clarify our model. So what we have is we have ions. Let me try to draw it in a consistent way. Any questions so far? So what I'm trying to draw here is with this, let me use some other color. So I'm trying to draw here these dots. They are the nuclei. And then we have some core electrons. And nuclei plus core electrons, they are going to form our ions. And these ions, they are arranged in a periodic lattice due to the interaction or the potential energy due to ion-ion repulsion. And the electrons, they are, it's not very symmetric, but you get. So electrons are everywhere for the moment. Now we ignored many interaction terms when we did our analysis for the band so far. So let's write down a general Hamiltonian. By general, I mean now we want to include interactions, two-particle interactions between the ions. So ions interact with each other. There is Coulomb repulsion between these ions, these ions, and so on. Any pair of ions, they repel. There's also Coulomb repulsion between electrons. So let's try to write down this Hamiltonian. The total Hamiltonian, it will have kinetic energy of the ions. It will have ion-ion interaction. It will have kinetic energy of the electron. It will have interaction between electrons. And we'll have interaction between electrons and ions. Now, this kinetic energy of the ions, we know how to write this term in second quantization. Using field theory, we'll use this capital R for the fields of the ions as argument. Capital M is the mass of the ions. Now the ion-ion potential, this is a term that includes four fields. Now, I'm going to assume that these ions, they have a charge Z times E. So they, this is just our notation. So what that means is they valence, they give Z electrons, the valence electrons, and they are left with the deficit charge that we denote by ZE. So this is the charge of the ions. So the interaction, the Coulomb interaction, we can write this as Z E square divided by 4 pi epsilon naught mod R1 minus R2. similarly, we'll have electron. Yes.
Center.
Oh, yeah.
On a second.
Similarly, let's write it down once, all of the terms, and then we can analyze by looking. We'll not erase this. Now, so far, we have also ignored spin of the electrons. Now, let's put that back in. So we are saying that electrons, now from now on, we'll consider electrons with spin, and they have up and down spin. In principle, you can also have spin for ions, but we are going to ignore spin of the ions. Let's write down V electron and ion. This now will have 1 sum over sigma, integral d cube electronic coordinate, and let's write it down first. Now, there will be a term that would be for electron-electron interactions, which we'll use later on. I've not written it because it's analogous to other terms written here. Okay, so always the order will keep whatever comes here, here, and then the order is reversed for the inhalation operators. This order we'll discuss later is useful when we use Wick's theorem. Now, so far, so there is another term that is V electron-electron that would be same like this term, but these capital R's will be replaced by small r's, and you won't have Z here.
What's a sigma?
This is just a spin. Electron spin. We're ignoring spin of the ions. Any questions so far? So dealing with these interactions is a bit harder. So we are not going to start with this bands. We are not going to assume starting with the band. We're not going to start with the bands. Our starting point is we are going to take a step back, and we are going to look at the potential that gave rise to these bands. So that is, if you draw the, imagine this lattice. So if you think of the potential that is produced by these ions, potential that the electrons feel is that electrons are attracted to these ions. So you can draw, think of a Coulomb. So what I'm trying to draw is interaction potential that the electrons will see. So I'm trying to draw 1 over r potential. So if the electron is somewhere here, this is what it sees, the potential. It is attracted towards the ion. And on the y-axis is So this is really the distance. And on y-axis, we are plotting the potential that the electron sees due to lattice. Right? Now, if we start from this, we deduce that electrons, they should form bands, and then band gaps open up at the zone corner. Because we are now going to talk about interactions, we are going to make one simplification, a big one, which is, so this is the potential that the electron sees. So you can think of the net potential as it's going to be something like this. So what that really means is if you have electron here, it is attracted to this. At this point, it will go there and so on. So this is just a schematic. In principle, what we know is that the ions will produce a potential which is same periodicity as that of the lattice. The assumption we are going to make is we are going to replace this periodic potential by a constant. So this value, what this really means is we have like uniform ions and so this is a way of drawing these ions that we assume that they are uniformly spread out in the entire system. So the charge density they produce is uniform. So we are ignoring any periodicity there is. This is what is called the Jellium model. Now, this is useful just to build intuition over these interaction terms. And later on, we will discuss other possibilities also, including the effects of bands and so on. So what we have really done is we have replaced this periodic potential by a constant. What this constant is, we assume that the density, there is ions have homogeneous density or charge density. Which is Z times E times rho ion. So in our model, charge density is just charge times density. So what we are really saying is that the density, which is number divided by volume, this is uniformly spread out. Now, if I write this, that the density operator for ions is it clear that this is the density operator for ions? So you can just integrate over this density operator, and you can see this will be integral dr, and when you substitute for fields, you will have sum over kk prime. So let's try to do. So we integrate over R and divide by the total volume over this operator. So when you replace these field operators in terms of momentum, you will get another volume factor, sum over KK prime. and you would see that this will turn out to be 1 over omega sum over k ck dagger ck. So now these C operators, these are creation operators for the ions. So it really gives you the total number of ions divided by total volume when you integrate. So this is really the density operator for the ions. What this approximation really means is that in the Jellium model, the expectation value of this density operator is a constant. So expectation value of psi ion dagger r this it does not depend on r, this is a constant, and we assume this to be rho ion. Any questions so far? Now let's try to calculate expectation value of ion-ion interaction. So if we calculate expectation value of this term in the Jellium model, so by this what we mean is we are calculating the expectation value in the ground state. So expectation value of this ion-ion term means expectation value of this quantity. Now these are field operators. We know that the density is uniform. So this expectation value is going to be... Another thing that I'm going to do is, if you look at this interaction, R1 minus R2, think about two ions, one at R1, one at R2. They have this potential. But by integrating over all space, you're double counting. Counting one ion, so you choose the first ion in the pair, and then the second ion. But there are two ways of doing this. So to avoid double counting, I will put a factor of half here. So this expectation value is going to be half integral d cube r prime, you put z e whole square, or what this would be is you will have psi dagger r ion psi r. Psi dagger r prime, psi r prime. What have I done here is I know going in that there has to be the density of ions, I know going in is constant. So I can simply write down these two as the density of the ions itself. So I can replace this by ze square divided by 4 pi epsilon naught r minus r prime rho ion square. So I'm going to put psi dagger psi at r as a constant in this term. And now this is our starting assumption. So for the moment, we have four terms here, four operators. When you calculate expectation value of some operators, some random operators, you should really use Wick's theorem. You should write these operators in terms of the normal ordered plus the contractions. And when you do the contractions and take expectation value, all the normal order terms will vanish. The only terms that will survive are the fully contracted terms. This will play an important role when we will calculate the expectation value of electron-electron interactions. For the ions, we are assuming that the ion density is uniform. So I'm simply going to replace this by the density and this quantity by the density, and I can get this term. Right? Now I can go to center of mass and relative coordinates, and I'll conclude that this omega by 2 is integral over R ze square rho ion square divided by R. Now this R here is relative coordinate. We can write relative. But because it's been integrated over, we don't need, we can use any symbol we want. So from here to here, I went to the center of mass coordinate, and then integration over center of mass coordinate gives me a volume factor, and I left the relative coordinate. Now, what I see here is that this integrand diverges as R goes to zero, right? Similarly, we'll find that there is another divergence in this term, the electron ion term. And then when we include the electron-electron interactions, we'll use Wick's theorem, we'll find that there are two terms, two ways to fully contract these four operators. One of those terms is going to diverge, and one term will not diverge. That we'll see that it cannot be written as a density operator. What we'll find is that the sum of the three diverging terms will cancel out. So charge neutrality, demanding that if we start with this situation, the density of electrons should also be uniform, and this will cancel the divergences in the system. So this will take 10, 15 minutes, so we'll do it on Monday. So our goal is set. We are going to keep in mind all these interaction terms. There is electron-electron interaction term also. But keep in mind that we do see that there are divergences in these interactions. And Gilliam model provides us a very simple picture where we can include the quantum effects associated with these interactions. But it's an oversimplified model, but it still gets a lot of qualitative features right in what we observe. And this will be our task Monday, and then we'll start with phonons. Any questions?